Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much to our previous presenters. These were very informative. I'm still going to talk about disparities, but in a slightly different context. So as Dennis mentioned, my name is Ashley Jewell. I am the maternal and child health epidemiologist at the State Department of Public Health in Colorado. Today, I'm going to talk about mental health disparities among public high school youth in Colorado. These data were from a baseline descriptive analysis that we completed for a larger maternal and child health project. So why mental health? Mental health among youth is of great interest in Colorado since we have the 8th highest teen suicide rate. That's based on 2013 data, and that was specific to teens ages 15 to 19. Additionally, suicide is the leading cause of death for youth ages 15 to 24 in Colorado. It used to be motor vehicle deaths up until 2009, and since 2009, suicide has overtaken as the leading cause of death among that age group. Additionally, our Colorado Violent Death Reporting System showed that half of youth suicides in Colorado involved a current depressed mood. As part of the Title V Maternal and Child Health Block Grant application process, every 5 years we are expected to complete a comprehensive needs assessment. And then as the MCH epidemiologist, we worked on several maternal and child health issue briefs. And there's a picture of one on here. We had 12 different topic areas. And the briefs were about 4 to 6 pages in length. And these served a variety of purposes, including providing a variety of quantitative data to use in the needs assessment. We did 2 in particular that gave us the information for this presentation, one specifically on mental health among Colorado children and youth, and then another one on injury among children and youth in Colorado. The briefs included overall prevalence and incidence data in addition to data on disparities by various demographic factors. We also looked at risk and protective factors. Again, these were completed for a lay audience, so we did not get to do a lot of really in-depth analysis, but maybe doing that in our data to action process, which we'll be doing over the next year. But as a result of this needs assessment, the Maternal and Child Health Program in Colorado selected youth mental health as a priority for our work for the next 5 years. So when we set out to complete the issue brief on mental health among children and youth, we had various questions that we wanted to answer, and I'm hoping I will give you a brief answer today as well. The first question is, what is the prevalence of mental health issues among public high school students in Colorado? Are there disparities in mental health in this population, and are there associated risk and protective factors? So for our methods, we were able to use a cross-sectional survey. This is a survey that we call in Colorado the Healthy Kids Colorado Survey. It was launched in the fall of 2013. It includes questions from the Youth Risk Behavior Survey that many states also participate in, including their questions on depression and then those questions related to suicide thoughts and attempts. In 2013, we had a very robust sample size. We surveyed around 25,200 high school students from 106 schools. We also were able to include a sample of about 20,000 middle school students. This analysis is only looking at the high school students. We looked at the mental health questions, and we stratified them by select demographic variables and risk and protective factors using SAS 9.3, and we assessed differences between groups using a chi-square test, and p-values less than 1% were considered significant, and you'll see that indicated with an asterisk. So here is the characteristics of our high school population. You can see about half of the students were male and half were female. Almost 60% were white youth. About 5% were African American youth. A little under 1% were American Indian or Alaska Native. 3.5% were Asian. Almost 3 in 10 were Hispanic. And then we had about 5% of youth reporting multiple races. Additionally, in 2013, Colorado added a question to assess sexual orientation status. This question asked the student to describe which best describes them, and that they could select from heterosexual, gay, or lesbian, bisexual, or not sure. And you can see that out of our whole, out of the whole set of respondents, almost 6% reported identifying as being gay, lesbian, or bisexual, and you'll see in the figures that's represented by a GLB. So here are just the specific prevalence results for the overall high school population. You can see that 60% of high school youth reported having mental health not good on one or more the past 30 days. 1 in 4 youth reported that they'd been sad or hopeless almost every day for 2 weeks or more in a row, that they had stopped doing some usual activities. Almost 15% reported that they had seriously considered attempting suicide during the previous 12 months before the survey. 12% reported that they actually made a plan about how they would attempt suicide. And then a little under 7% actually attempted suicide on one or more times during the previous 12 months. And then finally, a little over 2% made a suicide attempt that resulted in an injury, poisoning, or overdose that had to be treated by a doctor or nurse. We then selected 3 of these indicators, so the sad or hopeless, the seriously considered attempting suicide, and actually attempted suicide, to then determine if there were any disparities, which I will show you now. So this figure just shows us the prevalence when stratified by sex and then by sexual orientation status. You can see that 1/3 of females reported that they've been sad or hopeless. This is significantly different when compared to males. You can see that almost 60%, so 6 in 10 of the GLB youth reported that they've been sad or hopeless every day for the past 2 weeks. This was also significantly different than the heterosexual youth. Again, and that's almost a 3 times increase. We then looked at this been sad or hopeless stratified by race, ethnicity of the students. You can see that the prevalence of being sad or hopeless was highest at 31% among youth with multiple who identified with multiple races. When we compared to the white youth, you can see that the prevalence was significantly different among the Asians, the Hispanics, and then, as I mentioned, the youth of multiple races. We then looked at youth who reported considering suicide in the past 12 months. The prevalence is high among females. About 1 in 5 reported considering suicide, and that was statistically significantly different when compared to males. Only 1 in 10 males reported considering suicide. When looking at the GLB population, almost half, 48.5%, reported that they'd considered suicide in the past 12 months. And this was statistically significantly different when compared to the heterosexual youth. When we look at it by race ethnicity, again, the multiple race group had the highest prevalence at 22%. And then that, when compared to the white youth, the multiple race youth were the only ones that were considered significantly different when looking at the various race ethnicities. We also looked at attempted suicide in the past month. So again, you see the same patterns. 1 in 10 females attempted suicide 1 or more times. And this prevalence is statistically significantly different when compared to males. The prevalence among males was 4.1%. When looking at the GLB population, almost 3 in 10, at 28.2%, reported that they had attempted suicide 1 or more times in the past 12 months. And that was statistically significantly different when compared to the heterosexual youth. And then when looking at attempted suicide by race ethnicity, you can see that the prevalence was highest among the American Indian youth at 14.5%. When we compared the different groups to the white youth, we saw a statistically significant difference in attempted suicide among African American youth, American Indian, Hispanic, and youth of multiple races. In addition to looking at disparities by student characteristics, we also looked at risk and protective factors associated with feeling sad or hopeless or actually attempted suicide. So Colorado youth who experienced these select risk factors experienced a higher prevalence of depression and attempted suicide among youth in Colorado when compared to youth who did not experience the risk factor. So just to orient you to the table, among youth that reported they had been forced to have sexual intercourse when they did not want to, 56.7% reported feeling sad or hopeless almost every day for 2 weeks. This is statistically significantly different than youth who did not report ever having to have sex, so their prevalence was much lower at 21.2%. We see the same pattern with those who attempted suicide. Those who were ever forced to have sex, 31% attempted suicide, and that was significantly different compared to those who were not ever forced to have sex, and only 4.5% of that population attempted suicide. And we saw the same pattern with various risk factors, such as those who had reported being bullied at school, those who reported being electronically bullied, students who reported that they purposely hurt themselves without wanting to die, and then, of course, those who considered suicide. We also looked at some other factors, such as smoking and use of marijuana and binge drinking and prescription drug misuse, and they all had similar patterns, but to a lesser degree. We were also lucky enough to be able to ask some questions on protective factors on our Healthy Kids Colorado survey. These are just two examples, but with these, you can see that we have the opposite effect. So youth who experienced these protective factors experienced a lower prevalence of depression or attempted suicide when compared to youth who did not experience the protective factor. So among youth who reported that they had participated in extracurricular activities, 1 in 4 reported being feeling sad or hopeless, and then among youth who did not participate in extracurricular activities, 3 in 10 reported feeling sad or hopeless. And then for attempted suicide, among youth who participated in extracurricular activities, 5.6% reported attempting suicide. And among youth who did not participate in extracurricular activities, 9% reported attempted suicide. And you can see a similar pattern with another protective factor, which was having someone to go to for help when you had a serious problem. So for discussion, we can note that certain populations, such as American Indian youth, youth of multiple races, and gay, lesbian, or bisexual youth experience higher rates of depression and suicide. Additionally, youth who experience certain risk behaviors experience higher rates of depression and suicide. And then protective factors are associated with lower rates of depression and suicide among youth. These results do align with what we are finding being reported in the literature and from other health surveys. Of course, we have some limitations. This data comes from a cross-sectional survey, so the direction of the associations cannot be inferred. The sample does not include youth enrolled in private high schools, alternative high schools, and it does not include youth who are not in school who may have various different risk factors and to varying degrees. And then additionally, the survey does not ask questions about circumstances around depression or suicide attempts, so we have to use other data sources to get information about that. And then in conclusion, this analysis showed that there are disparities in mental health status by race, ethnicity, and sexual orientation. Additionally, the analysis showed that a question to assess sexual orientation was successfully added to a population-based survey, and it yielded very valuable information that will then be used to inform our planning for maternal and child health work over the next 5 years. Some recommendations that came out of this analysis: we really need to try to find more evidence for interventions to prevent and treat mental disorders in youth. We also would need some evidence for routine screening of suicide risk factors among youth, which is being promoted by the American Academy of Pediatrics. but it's not consistently being promoted by other organizations. We also, public health departments should be encouraged to include a question to capture sexual orientation status on their population-based surveys in order to improve monitoring of health disparities among a very disparate population. And then these are some folks that I just want to make sure that I acknowledge because they were instrumental in conducting this analysis and, of course, gathering all the data, which was a huge task. And that's all. Are there any questions before anyone goes to lunch?
We have time for questions. Please come to the microphone.
Thank you. I appreciate the comments because they're all very true, and it's something we struggle with. And, you know, public health doesn't necessarily have a lot of funding, but, you know, there are grants like STEM or other things that maybe can help.
I'm PJ Beaudry. I work with one of the tribal epidemiology centers in South Dakota. We're based in Rapid City, but we work with tribes in North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa, and Nebraska. And something that we've been looking into recently is kind of the connection between historical trauma and kind of the ongoing trauma in the form of adverse childhood experiences and toxic stress and things like that with some of the behavioral and mental health issues that we see kind of down the road, including really high suicide rates. I just would almost recommend those as kind of areas that might be worth looking into given some of your data related to American Indians and how they are among the highest in terms of attempts and you know, things like that, and kind of that feeling of depression and sadness and stuff, and would be interested to know if that was something that you guys had looked into or if that had come up in some of your research or anything like that.
Yeah, no, I think that's a very, very valid point. Well, first of all, two things I want to say. This was the first year we actually had a large enough sample size. We worked with the Tribal Epidemiology Group in New Mexico to actually sample our southwestern tribe. So that was exciting. We never had that data before. You know, we basically had Hispanic and white, not Hispanic. So first of all, that was exciting. And then additionally, I agree the adverse childhood experiences is a very big topic that I think we're looking at, and I can definitely carry that back to our team. As I mentioned, we're doing some data to action to work on our work plans and really try to identify what some of those those issues are and determine how to move forward and try to use our MCH money to impact that. And that, of course, is really nice because that overlaps with other priority areas. And then if there's some type of, you know, I guess, synergy with other funding, hopefully we can look into adverse child experiences in that population. But we're trying to develop those partnerships as well. So we'll see.
Great, thanks.
Elizabeth Waller from Johnson County in Kansas. Just trying to piggyback off New York State. I'm just now working with one of our school districts who's implemented a mental health first aid program for their staff members through Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. They got a grant to do some training. And I think that's one of the ways that we can help this. You know, you pointed out that statistically significant people didn't have somebody to turn to. And I think what our nurse who's been running this program at our school district has found is that even when presented with these issues, the staff at the schools don't know how to deal with it. They don't know what they're doing. They don't know who to send them to, or they're just sort of frozen because of the stigma that surrounds mental health. So I think that, you know, we as public health, with our limited funds, if we reach through the school districts and see what implementation and what interventions we can do there may help ease some of this really staggering prevalence of suicide.
Thank you.
I mean, I work for the clinic health center in inner city Boston. I kind of follow the problems we're talking about. And something to continue on what you said and what we are, I feel like I'm literally ground zero for myself now. What we recently have done for the last 2 years is to have the community health center partner with the local public schools. And every, we have two high schools, and we have taken 600 kids who regularly get mental health and mental health screening. And one thing which I thought, we cannot have surveys like this without the basic foundation question of family, what's going on with the family, because you can pretty much make an assumption that most of these kids with mental health or mental health problems also have a disturbed family background or something going on. So this is, I know that most of the surveys are designed like this, but it feels like a vacuum when you are talking about youth and mental health or mental health problems, and if somehow can include family questions, that really takes us to the next step, because these kids are not existing in the thin air. So those are two things. I feel like it's been sort of a model program to basically capture or catch these kids in school and try to connect them with the community health centers.
Thank you. I appreciate your suggestion. I don't know if that's necessarily a lot of other states have done, but we do have a lot of control over what we ask on our survey, and I'm not sure if it would be the right population, but we could consider, you know, maybe different questions around family life that kind of maybe get at some of the adverse childhood experience or something like that. But to be continued. Yes.
Hi, Amanda Jones, Washington State. I really liked your presentation.
Oh, thank you.
Did you guys look at any kind of geographical assessment, like urban versus rural?
I love that question. You know, specifically because our needs assessment was at the state level, I did not look at anything. Because of our large sample size, this is the first year that we actually are going to be able to do sub-state analyses. So we have 21 health statistics regions, and we've given them a bunch of data. And, of course, those are, you know, urban and rural. But I think that is an analysis that we're going to want to try to do here sooner rather than later. Thank you. Okay.
All right. Well, thanks for everyone for being here. Let's give another round of applause for our team.